Okay, is everyone ready in the studio?
Totally red, Snow.
Reporting live from the beating heart of Nutmeg Country.
Able, actuated, and opinionated. Yes.
This is Alt Bike Now.
Alternative radio.
For alternative cyclists. I'm Ronnie Romance.
R-A-F-M.
R-A-F-M? I'm thinking this is something to do with the Tour de France coming up.
Oui, très bien.
I'm sorry, Avex Zwift.
No, you can leave that out if you want.
The commentators don't, though.
No, yeah, they have to say it. They're legally obliged to say Avex Zwift.
Folks, we're here live from the studio at WKY Jelly outside our house in beautiful Nutmeg Country. And we are experiencing perhaps a little bit of rain, so we may have to go inside a little bit. But I've been really liking to do this podcast outside. We got a rare nor'easter, summertime nor'easter coming through tonight or perhaps right now.
And you know he loves talking about the weather.
So, yeah, I love talking about the weather. Yeah, yeah.
I'm seeing with my eyes raindrops.
And the door just slammed shut on the inside. Well, we've got a special guest here.
Our special friend, Jory here.
Yep.
Hello.
Jory, would you like to do the ASL, age, sex, location?
Age, sex, location.
You're going to have to speak a little bit.
Just coming around the bend of 40 years.
Wow, that is ancient.
I just had my height measured inside.
Oh, that's good. So what we? I think we were at maybe 5'9"?
5'9" and 3/8".
Pretty good. Wow. So that's...
We'll call that 5'10".
Sex, yes.
Sex, yes. Sex, us.
And where are you currently?
I'm a man.
Where are you? Where do you live currently?
And I currently live in Bozeman, Montana.
That's a long ways away from Nutmeg Country. What brings you here?
In every aspect. Yeah. Just a little time to spend with my friends, going on a little family trip at the very end of the month, and thought I'd extend by a week and spend some time at the swimming hole, primarily. A little bit of biking here and there, some pizza.
Watching the Tour de France
Watching
with us.
The tour.
Well, it has, been exceptional having you around here,
Thanks.
These parts.
Thanks.
It's always really, really nice for us to be able to show off where we live through a different lens. Kind of, and you've had pretty much perfect weather this entire time around. It's been like September weather,
pristine,
which is bizarre. There's not even any bugs. In mid-July, we're having to bundle
bites.
Up.
I've only got
only two bites
the
and
entire
none,
time.
And none, were any of them tick bites?
None that I will,
none
I'm
that
aware
we're aware of,
yet.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, hopefully.
Jory is staying in the van in the field, which has so much grass and potential for ticks, so I'm really surprised.
It's well cropped.
Yeah, it's well cropped. Yeah, it's well cropped. It's well cropped.
And a nice daily dip and scrub down.
Yeah, it's nice. After every ride, we get to go take a
dip.
And we've had so much rain that the swim hole is nearly above my head at this point.
Could even use another board.
Yeah, put another board in, it would be well over my head, and I'd drown because I can't swim. I can't. I
never learned.
But just barely.
You flail. You float.
I flail.
Okay, so for the show today, we've got a little bit of the wrap-up of the Tour de France men's. We'll talk about the femmes coming up quickly, and then this is mostly going to be responding to questions in our inbox. That's mostly going to be it.
A mailbag.
We've
Fabio's
got a lot.
Chest of mail.
Yeah, lots of mail. Mail time.
So, you know, if you've sent – we've had a lot of questions and comments sent in via our –
Our
Buzzsprout link page.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we've got a lot of those to get through, but we've selected a few. I'm sorry if we can't get we can't get to all of the questions, but we've selected a few that I think everyone's going to like.
That were kind of the repeat ones.
So yeah.
And Jory will be here because Jory's also a mechanic, extremely skilled at just about everything he does. Wonderful photographer.
Except pour over
beautiful
coffee.
Eyes.
Lucky boy syndrome, really.
Yeah.
Jory knows what's up. And
it is actually raining now.
The rain is playing.
So we're
okay,
just going to move inside. Okay, now we are inside. So you may notice a slight change in the acoustics, but yeah, it just began coming down.
Big raindrops.
So big summer raindrops.
Slapping.
So yeah, more water for the swim hole, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
So where were we? We were talking about how we were going to get straight into the, I mean, the tour just ended this past weekend.
Yesterday, day before.
What day is it? It's Tuesday today. So it ended on Sunday.
Yep.
And a pretty, I mean, for how dominant the leader has been for the entire tour, I held out, you know, Tade, of course, we all knew he was going to win the tour. So this, yeah. It wasn't like a surprise.
No one's surprised.
That, you know. Wasn't a total surprise. So, you know, I was constantly just looking for second place. I think most people were. And trying to just enjoy how dominant and such an amazing rider Tade is. It's just nice. I guess I'm mimicking all the commentators. It's just incredible to see somebody that good.
Just an honor to ride with the greatest cyclist.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right. So I guess we could set that up by right after. I think maybe did we talk about it already about Jonas?
Matthew said that
Matthew
too.
Said that
that's
after
right.
Winning the stage, just an honor to ride with the
best. Well, Jonas. Yeah, that's right. Jonas crashed out. Did we talk about that?
We already did.
Jonas crashed out. He's done. The next day, Remco has an incredible stage, and at the end of that stage, he says. They're like, hey, Remco, you have any aspirations for the yellow jersey? And he's like, he laughed. And this is Remco, who's got a chip on his shoulder, to say the least, perhaps the largest chip. He's basically just carrying around a bag of Tostitos on his shoulder at all times.
Santitas.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. So and he said, oh, no, not at all. It's just an honor to ride with Tade, to learn so much from him. What else did he say, Jordan?
Yeah, that's just that.
Yeah.
To be the closest to him, he said. To be near him is right. So we're building a god here.
Not to be near him.
The god is already there.
The god is already
the god
there.
Is present.
Yeah. Tade won 5 stages in this tour.
Uh huh. And has won the overall 5 times now. But so, you were pretty. You had a discontent.
Equaling. The record.
Equaling the record, but we should also say that Lance Armstrong, who we said we would never mention here, I just think it's funny. He goes on his, because somehow he's wiggled his way back into NBC. He's like, right, if you want to watch the stage, right next to it is, oh, see what these...
He was like, I definitely called you a bitch, Oprah, but I didn't call you fat. Let me be clear. You are a bitch, quotables. But you're definitely not fat, bro. All right, let's move on.
So he also said, so yeah, Toddy's going to keep on going after this 5 because he knows the real number.
Let's be honest.
He knows the real number.
He knows the real record.
Which is, of course, 7 if you're counting Lance Armstrong as a winner of the tour. I you know, respect. He won 7 times, in my opinion.
Let's count it.
So we're counting it, and I know Tade counts it. But I just thought that was pretty Lance to say that.
Lance.
But, yeah, so basically the last, like you know, with the exception of when he's turning on the gas, was that the first Alpe d'Huez stage?
The second one,
he was like...
The double, where Seppi almost died.
Right. Okay, so the final, this is, I guess, the Queen stage, the hardest stage of the tour. The Queen stage was on Saturday, the day before the last day. And Tade is all about helping Del Toro. Mm-hmm. And so you've been seeing this kind of like, you've been performatively.
Oh, that's what Jory thinks.
Jory, I think, are on the same page with this one.
Big time.
We were watching this stage. Well, first off, we got a complete spoiler because we watch at night. I get a spoiler from one of our ride buddies.
Buddies?
Yep. Uh-uh. Yeah, Namdol.
He's not a buddy after this.
And...
Talking about you, John Weeks.
But so we already kind of knew what was going to happen.
What did he say, Jory?
Oh, he went directly up to us and said immediately, Sepkus just crashed himself out of a stage win. Can you believe it?
And I go, God, John, this is why I don't even look at your text messages in July. He found us in person and said it. And so, yeah, so we're like, okay, you know, because with Jonas out, great opportunity for other members of the Jumbo or the Visma Lisa Bike team. So Sepp would be a great stage winner on the most climbing stage of the whole tour. I think it was 17,000 feet. Or did I do that right?
I think it might have been even more on that Queen stage.
Yeah.
It was like 100 miles and 17,000 feet.
We're not here for facts. We're just here for feeling.
Yeah, my facts are hard. It was a hard stage. And so
The hardest tour stage ever,
they said. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so Sepp makes a move with Richard Carapaz. Well, not with Richard Carapaz. Richard Carapaz and Sepp are basically like in the front, and they are track for one of them to win the race. Sepp crashes twice going down the final descent.
Looking like Sepp probably had it in the bag.
Yeah.
And Richie was racing for second.
Right, right. And Richard Carapaz of Ecuador has been so entirely aggressive, this
tenacious.
Entire tour. Tenacious.
Would possessed.
Be the, yeah. Possessed. Yeah. A rider possessed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he takes the win. Sepp nearly dies coming down. I think his final crash, it was up against like a net they had put out against like a corner.
To prevent exactly that.
To prevent him from falling off the edge.
And
he
worked.
Used
Thank
the
goodness.
Last 6 inches of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To stay on the road.
Mm. Precisely. And then
Richie passes him right. On the second
because
he had 30 seconds on Richie.
Yeah.
And then he crashed outside getting out of that tunnel.
These guys are racing
and
down
then,
a mountain pass.
Yeah. And his adrenaline is going crazy. This is what he said in the interview. And then Richie passes him on that second near fatal, like falling off of a mountain, like a proper mountain.
Right.
And Richie zooms by.
Yeah.
And then he.
Blue-bye.
You know, Sepp's got to be all flustered, but he was sending it.
Yeah.
He was sending it down. I mean, you used to say that people didn't race downhill, right? Mm-hmm, but everybody's racing downhill now, thanks to Peacock.
This race was won on the downhill.
True.
On the descent, right
Absolutely.
Before the finish line.
Mm-hmm. Wait. Mm-hmm.
And lost.
Lost, yeah, sadly.
So Carapaz comes across the line first, Sepp second.
Sepp's third, actually.
No, sorry. Mm-hmm. Sepp is third.
It's Remy.
Because Remco... Remco just lost 10 pounds for this tour, and he did so well. We don't like to encourage unhealthy weight loss, but these guys
Remco is impressive. At the end of that stage, there was someone waiting for him at the finish line, and he was kind of cheering for him on his like staff or whatever. And Remco's all mad. He's like, "Why do you cheer? I didn't win. I'm number two. Why are you cheering? Stop that.
Why are you celebrating?"
Which I respect that.
I think
Remco has become our favorite of this entire. I mean, I loved Carapaz's attacking style, but Remco, the personality here has really began to blossom.
Yeah.
We already knew who Remco was, but the way he's handling all this.
Yeah.
With the exception of his comment about Tade being like, "It is just an honor to ride next to him and learn so much." Sure, I guess he has a lot to learn. But, I mean, this kind of slides into... So these guys, I mean, Sepp almost died trying to win this tour stage. Richard Carapaz turned himself inside out multiple times. This was his second stage win. But almost every stage that had a mountain on it, Richard Carapaz was off the front, just like peeling himself down to the skin in order to win a stage. This is how it is in, you know, in the Tour de France. Like these guys just give it everything. And oftentimes they give like overly everything and have less than nothing left. And
just look at Matthew.
Yeah.
Just look at Valentin Parapantra. He has nothing left. Mm-hmm. There's nothing.
He started the tour at 110
Someone
pounds.
Please
maybe
checking
100
on Valentin Parapantra.
Really? You know, he's contorted his entire body to maybe he won a stage last year on Alpe d'Huez.
Well, he was trying for the polka dot jersey. What was cute was him and Richie Carapaz's and Valentin's like camaraderie. Like they were close. They really liked each other.
Because Carapaz at the end of this, Carapaz took the polka dot jersey.
Of course, yeah.
He deserves it.
He definitely.
He deserves everything.
Yeah.
And so I take back all the little bitch comments I made about him last year in the Giro.
There's no taking those back.
There's no taking those back. No. You know, because I was just like upset with how him and Del Toro did the whole Giro thing. I was like, Del Toro, like in the Giro last year, I was like, man, this guy is either has like no idea what's going on or is misinformed or people are just like picking on him.
I think the common thread here is Del Toro.
Yes, okay. That's what we're – thank you for keeping us on track here. So if you've been following along these past few weeks, you've seen Tade and Del Toro, you know, for lack of a better term, bromance.
That's what they call it.
That's what they call it. And it is and you may cringe at that term bromance. Well – what I've seen is very cringeworthy.
Have I got some video clips for you? Instagram for you.
What's great is that Tade is playing like father figure here, yet he's only 4 years older. Uh-huh. And he's like, this is my boy. This is my son.
Giving him a push at the end, up the hill.
Yeah, pushing
him
up the hill.
He has been sick. I've been hearing Del Toro, all the rest of UAE have been, sick, stomach bug, et cetera, eating in isolation, quarantining meals.
Right. But it doesn't excuse the complete disrespect for the stage and the other riders that I witnessed. Everyone else seemed to be pretty like hunky-dory about how, Del Toro and Tade finished this final stage. Because, of course, Tade's got it in the bag. He had like a 7-minute lead or whatever. He didn't have to do anything. He just wanted to be like Del Toro's like daddy domestique. And so the two of them, Del Toro can't take, am I getting this right? Was that where he couldn't take Remco? Was this another time where he couldn't take Remco for the win? For the second place or third place, whatever. Mm-hmm. So Del Toro not able to keep up with Remco, which is despicable.
I mean, he's a cagey little chihuahua, Remco. So
Yeah.
A lot to contend with.
You don't never know what you're going to get. But Del Toro should be a much more explosive rider. And we've seen him be a more explosive rider. Maybe it's just about explosive diarrhea these days.
That wearing those black shorts.
Yeah.
Final
but
stage.
Him and Tade, I want to paint the picture. So after all this, we've talked about what Pelopontra has done. We talked about Carapaz. We talked about Sepp almost dying. And we're coming to the end of this hardest stage in tour history. The final stage before the Champs-Élysées. And you love the way I say that. The Champs-Élysées.
The Champs-Élysées.
And how do Del Toro and Tade cross the line? Like basically like
lip to
arm,
lip.
And, arm in arm, lip to lip.
Cheek to cheek.
Cheek to cheek. And they're giving like this, they're like putting, like it was Tade's idea to put like the Del Toro like
pointer finger
in the air. They both
little bull imagery.
Right. Pantomiming. Mm-hmm. A little bull imagery as they giggled like schoolboys. After nearly the entire Peloton had risked their lives, life and limb.
Buried themselves.
Hardest stage. How many times have I said that? Hardest stage of the tour. And
ever.
These two are going to completely disrespect it with their silly bromance.
My God.
Disrespecting tradition.
This is Alpe d'Huez.
Yeah.
And you're going to finish.
A hallowed climb.
And I just don't understand. This is just fun for them?
Mm-hmm.
It's not supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. We're going to do our little pokey horns. Joke around. No.
Yeah.
It was not the spot.
Not the spot for it, guys.
Mm-hmm. This is a funeral, not a wedding.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's what you're saying.
Yes,
that's what we're saying.
Okay.
Yeah. And God, it didn't even take a moment to process. For me, I was like ill. I was like, this is so.
I saw it firsthand. Ron's grief was visceral. He had to get up and leave the room. I wish you could have seen it, folks.
He needed a lot of comfort granola.
Comfort granola. Yeah.
There was like three bowls of comfort.
You don't know
granola.
What it's like to have to process all those nuts and coconut shavings, the next morning. Okay. Mm-hmm. So
on top of all the disappointment and shame.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
your intestine just shredded.
So I am no longer a Tade fan.
Whoa, you heard it here first.
Yeah, I am no longer a Del Toro fan. I loved Del Toro.
We've got to assume he's young enough that he may come into some semblance of panache, but right now he's got negative aura.
Negative aura. Mm-hmm. Boy. Well, yeah, because you've also seen video footage of him like goofing around at the
riding into the lobby of a hotel. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
acted like a 22-year-old.
Absolutely not. No, you do not.
You just don't do this. This is a traditional sport, and I feel like Tade is like not respectful to those traditions. And maybe, you know, this is just me being old.
We did come up in an era of heavy bullying.
Jordan was there too.
Mm-hmm. Bullying and hazing was a big part of cycling.
Big part of cycling, and it kept the lid on this sort of
boil over, this froth.
And tomfoolery.
Exactly.
So, yeah, those are our parting thoughts on that stage.
Traumatized parting thoughts.
So just, you know, we're wrong. I mean, I looked at comments everywhere, and everyone's like, that was awesome. I can't believe Todd I works for so hard for, I mean, Del Toro, I don't think would have won anything on this.
What class on the guy?
What class? I was like, yeah, whatever, you know.
Ron's not sold on it. I liked it. I did not come up in the hazing scenes. I think all of this is really sweet. A really good show for everyone.
So, yeah.
I do think that Todd is kind of love bombing Isaac Del Toro a little bit.
Yeah, you're hitting the nail on the head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's getting love bombed, and then he's going to get left behind. Mm-hmm. And the only reason why I think Tade was such a super domestique for Isaac is because he wanted Isaac to have the white jersey and not Paul Sexas, mm-hmm. who was offered double the amount that Todd makes. And he was probably super mad about that and was like, you know, as much as he wants a competitor, he is probably really offended that a Frenchman comes out of nowhere. And, you know, you do have a Slovenian and a Mexican rider, which mm-hmm. are kind of outside of the Mount Olympus countries of the Tour de France, and cycling heritage wise, it's not Italy, France, or Spain, you know, like all the Netherish lands.
All of whom had no stage wins this tour.
Mm-hmm.
First time the French haven't had a stage win since 1999.
Mm. We miss you, Thibaut Pinot. We miss you so much.
So lastly, we're going to move on. Last stage of the tour on the Champs-Élysées was dang exciting. Mm. Holy moly. And I tuned in. I looked at the stage preview. I was like, oh, we're just going to see some parade laps, like it sometimes, oftentimes, and it comes to a bunch sprint at the end. You see Jasper Philipsen win, whatever. It's like, okay, you know, sprint stages, I think I speak for everyone, are pretty, you know, pretty
boring
low
till
on
the
list.
End.
Yeah. So but this ended up being Tade back to being an all right in my mind, I guess. Tade lights it up at the end there and starts attacking because they had like these cobbled sections. It looked like a classic.
That's how it always is.
No, it's not.
It was last year.
Well, maybe it was last year. I just don't remember. So last year, Tade did the same thing and Wout took the stage win.
Yeah. Yep.
How quickly we forget. That's what I couldn't imagine. I had totally forgotten about that.
Yeah. It's been a while since we've seen Wout.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got a mobile plan now.
Wout at full cry. Yeah. And this year, Vanderpool latches on to Tade and takes it to the line. And wins by a tenth of a second with a huge, like, after I've never seen, like, that's when you want to see, like, one of the biggest engines in the world just completely empty themselves.
Dumped it out. All the way. What a thing of beauty.
So wins by a tenth of a second on a giant bike throw. And
after digging deep, like, you can see this footage of him kind of slow motion looking down, digging deep, thinking, okay, I've got maybe one more push. And it's not quite enough. And then he digs deep again and he goes maybe three times into the bottom of the bag. And somehow, that was really something. The crash into the barrier afterward, where he was just completely cross-eyed and just slumped over, fell, heaving, crying.
A fetal
trying
position.
To breathe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, asphyxiating in the ground as people are poking around trying to hand him Pellegrino sodas and man, wow, that was really highlight of the whole thing for me.
Yeah, what a way to end.
And
the
Matthew
tour. He's a dreamboat.
He's really a dreamboat for me.
He is a dreamboat. Looked so good doing it. So mm-hmm. the tour ends. We've got the podium is of course Tade at the top, and then we got Remco as second. And I wonder if Remco would have beaten Jonas anyway, and that crash last week just saved Jonas the embarrassment.
I disagree. I think Jonas, whatever.
Okay.
This is...
So, and then the third spot on the podium, Del Toro. Boy, oh boy, do I tell you, while they were all three of them were on the podium, having Remco between Tade and Del Toro, having someone between them, you could tell that they were missing being right by one another's side.
I disagree. I think
you think they're.
I think Todd's love bombing is over. He's gonna move on.
Yeah, because Del Toro did like come up behind him and give him a hug, and Tade's like, I'm talking to Remco.
Nice.
I think it's over.
It's going to be great because there is going to be a point where Del Toro is on a different team than Tade.
He's going to have to be.
He's going to have to be. Yep. Although Tade wants him to stay on UAE. Who knows, you know?
Who knows
what's going to happen to the UAE in the next few years?
The love bombing is over.
It's over.
These are petrol states.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know what's going on with these teams. Mm-hmm. You know, we love this sport, but it's completely funded by dark money.
Mm-hmm.
But
use them and lose them.
It's kind of like what I like. I kind of like that about the sport, though.
Oh, yeah. You are little evil.
That's evil. Okay.
Shadowrun is here.
Boy, 25 minutes in. We better get the heck out of here. We got.
Well, it was an amazing Tour de France, men's, mm-hmm. and it's going to be an amazing Tour de France femmes.
Avec Zwift.
All right. Calm down, Ron. the corrections. The Tour de France femmes Avec Zwift is going to be 9 stages. It's going to start August 1st, so...
This Saturday.
Get ready. There's only 2 mountain stages, which I find a little offensive, but there is Mont Ventoux, which I guess a lot of the pro femmes wanted. I'm excited to see the big battle for the stages. It's going to be amazing. We've got all the stars.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really interested in how Kim LaCour is going to perform because she is awesome. She's the one that famously like crashed with Kasia and stayed back to check on her. Mm-hmm. Love that for her.
Of course, Kasia is going to be racing.
Kasia's racing. Their new kids came out. She's going to kill it.
No more Zonda Crypto.
There's no more Zonda Crypto. It's Canyon SRAM and another tertiary sponsor. Mm-hmm. But all the bigs are there. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Tune in for the FEMS. We're going to be,
we'll be
talking about it for the rest of August.
Next episode, you'll hear us talking about the FEMS Avec Zwift.
You just love Avec Zwift.
Because that's how they say it. We love Zwifting. Most of our riding is done on Zwift.
Never Zwifted in our lives, folks. That's the
test.
Yeah, but we'll also be talking about a little Vermont trip that we're going on this weekend for my little birthday trip. So that'll be the Real Life Report back next week. But
that's right.
Without further ado, what are we moving on to?
Do you have a favorite femme for taking the yellow?
Well, I mean, I want Kasia, but, you know, we know Kasia.
You want Kasia.
Yeah. I love the way that Kasia rides.
She's the most exciting racer.
It's a very aggressive rider. Like, loves to race, honestly. And Jordan's been there too. We all 3 of us in this room have ridden with Kasia.
Been personally punished.
Personally punished by Kasia.
She was talking to you about like cream cheese or something. No. Like
sour cream.
She was the very Polish. Fixated on my culinary habits.
Oh.
Interesting. Yeah.
So maybe that.
We all want Kasia to win.
Yeah, we all want Kasia to win.
Yeah.
So
potatoes. It was potatoes I was talking
potatoes
about.
Potatoes and sour cream was the, and cabbage is like the Polish cure for everything. That's what she was saying.
Uh-huh. You're depressed? Just put a cabbage on your heart. That'll help. So that's easy. That's Kasia, Kasia, Kasia.
Oh, we're all Kasia?
Okay.
We're all on Team Kasia here?
Yeah, 1,000%.
I like when Demi Vollering is doing well, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, she's an exciting rider. Kind of do it all.
And we have a dark horse.
We've got several. I mean, Pauline Ferrand-Prevot, she hasn't really been showing the form that she had last year.
The champion from last year.
That's
a mountain biker who came and won the tour.
Yeah, yeah. She won everything.
Decided that she no longer wanted to be associated with the lowest rung of cycling culture.
Amen.
And came to race the tour.
Yep, won Paris-Roubaix last year this was good training to win the tour. Can you imagine? It's nice. Now I can have a rock next to my husband's rock. And crazy. So she's a contender too up there. People are saying Kim LaCour is in great shape. The Swiss rider who also crashed with Marlon Reusser is also another one that's a favorite. And I love her interviews too.
Mm-hmm. So we'll get to check in after the first three stages, I guess, next week.
Yep.
So
fun.
Stay tuned for that. We'll do it in the beginning of the episode because all you alt cyclers out there, you're all closet pro racing.
We've turned a few people into tour watchers, which is really fun.
This year it's really happened a lot.
I think holistic cycling, the opportunities to be a holistic cyclist have never been better.
Mm-hmm. True. Mm-hmm.
So speaking of a holistic cyclist.
Let's get into fan mail.
Do a little, not just yet. I wanted to do a little local pervert series on Jory here.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
Jory's not talking about Alex.
Yeah, Jory's not local.
Well, he's not local, but he is right now.
He is a pervert.
Currently. Would you rather be local or a pervert? Let's start there.
Pick your category.
Everyone seemed to enjoy Alex's drooling all over the microphone last week.
Yeah.
Talking about his bikes.
Talking
fast. I think we've all been there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I want to talk a little. I want to ask similar questions to Jory here, but of course, I left my notepad at the warehouse. So, we're going to have to go off the top of the head. Jory, tell us when did you get into cycling and what was the gateway drug?
I'd say my first bike was probably back in the sixth year of my life.
Sixth year of your life.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
So that
cute.
Nice. Cantilevers or V-brakes?
Coaster brake. Coaster,
single pivot. Mm-hmm. Very nice. Mm-hmm. Simple.
Installed it up with, the double tire solid tube install back and forth. Growing up in Van Horn.
Van Horn, Texas. Mm-hmm. This is where Jory grew up. Anyone's familiar with that part of West Texas? It's way West Texas.
Lots of goat heads.
Lots of goat heads near Marfa.
Not likely spot to be riding bikes. Yeah, near Marfa, a little north of Marfa.
About an hour north of Marfa.
That's little over there.
Yeah. That is little over there. That's big country.
That's right next door.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, riding around in the levees there as a kid. Mm-hmm. That was my introduction.
So when was your first nice bike?
First nice bike, the Specialized Allais I picked up from Bicycle Sports Shop.
In Austin?
Damn. In Austin, Texas.
So had you moved to Austin already?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what year is this?
This is 2005.
Okay, 2005. So we overlapped in Austin a little bit. We didn't know each other, but we overlapped.
In 2004, I think.
We knew people. And so did you work at Bicycle Sports Shop in Austin? Bicycle Sports Shop, folks, this was kind of the biggest, before the Lance era and a little bit after the Lance era, this was the big Trek deal where they were they?
Yeah, they were like Trek Specialized,
everything. The shop that would have
the
been
big
doing
shop.
Really well in that time.
I didn't work there at the time. I was still going to college at that point, but
now Johnny Pucci worked there also.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Him.
Johnny Pucci and Rachel Cook.
Mm-hmm. So you get a Specialized LA.
Mm-hmm.
And steel? Is it steel or aluminum?
It's aluminum. Mm-hmm. Aluminum with a carbon fork and zerts all over
there. Oh, it had zerts? Mm-hmm. And the LA had zerts?
It had zerts in the fork.
Okay, on the fork. Oh God!
Did you love it?
Era.
Did you love that so much?
It was my entry to get, to getting hazed into learning how to pace line at the old airport track there in Mueller. It's now since turned into housing development, but yeah, that was my intro into my first real bike.
Did you now at the time? Did you know those zerts were cringe?
Yes, I did.
You knew. Yeah, and you were ashamed of your zerts immediately.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, it was a little bit of curiosity at the beginning, like most things in life. A little curiosity immediately replaced by shame.
Deep shame.
Life in shambles afterwards.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. So you're riding the Zerts bike. Are you doing any local races? Are you doing just the group rides? Like what's the feel? Mm-hmm. Paint me a little picture of Austin and the aughts.
I started doing the 360 CycleWorks group ride that met there.
Mm-hmm.
On the loop, kind of showed me.
Kind of on the way. That's kind of a ways to ride for to start a group ride.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We were doing like the Progress Coffee Ride, mm-hmm. and then, I'm embarrassed to say this, the Austin Tricyclist.
The Austin Tricyclist. Oh, yeah.
That was Saturday.
Very centrally located.
And were you on that ride?
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't.
No, I commend you. I can't believe I just said that. I was more of a VOP guy. VOP.
Yeah.
What's that?
Velo on Peloton.
Oh,
any old Austin heads will know.
I should, well, Well, I don't know.
I'm looking at you, Ron.
I'm 6 years older.
Yeah.
So you
joined the UT cycling team and really
UT cycling team. So you raced around Texas on the UT cycling team. And then when do you think,
Stefan Roth,
the shout
name,
out
the legendary name.
So mountain biking, when did that end?
No, mountain biking didn't happen until quite a bit later.
Okay.
When I started going out west, spending some time in Bozeman.
Right.
With friends there.
Now, we kind of started to become friends at a BTC, Beat the Clock club in Austin.
Super
It's kind of like
weekend.
An old, it was a non-racing club. You guys had kits and stuff in the early years, but it was a non-racing club, which is kind of cool. When I think back on it, that's kind of like a blueprint, I think, for how a lot of these, alt bike clicks or clubs.
Yeah, a blueprint if you absolutely removed every drop of inclusivity. Then it's exactly the same.
Tell me, what was the problem with inclusivity?
No, it was just, there was an air around it curated by John Trujillo. It was an invite-only thing. You had to get vetted.
It was his messenger company at the time. Yeah, exactly. It was his bike messenger company at the time. So, yeah, you guys started to do little trips out to, first around in Super Bowl weekend out in Fredericksburg. Remember you did that, you did the first one with John Watson or something out to a lake somewhere. And I started noticing you. I had already moved away where I was back in Austin here and there just to dog sit. And then you guys started to come out to Tucson. To do this trip.
I think I was the first one to introduce you to a Rico. I think I pulled a Rico out of my bag and I remember you.
Rico GR. Yeah. So Jordan has a.
And Ron goes, what is that little
camera? What is that little camera?
I see that.
Yep. Rico changed my life.
Now here he is.
Yep. So then you went off and you did a long bike tour down.
A lot of bike touring years. Yeah.
Down that little Tour Divide stuff. And you end up really liking Montana.
Come across our mutual friend Hubert.
A lot of crossover. You start working for Adam Sklar.
Did some work for Adam Sklar.
Tell us a little
Moved
bit about
Montana.
Tell us a little bit about your time with Adam Sklar. I think most of our listeners would be interested to hear some of this stuff. You were kind of like his right hand prep man.
His chogi. actually, yeah, I think the term is fishwife. I think that was the term we coined.
That's what you put on your tax return.
Exactly. When it asked me in that box. But yeah, it was really, really nice. Did a lot of custom builds and some content creation and some marketing with Adam. Had a lot of fun as the brand was kind of growing from Adam being a solo maker to the designer extraordinary that he is now. And then when Adam moved that business to San Francisco, I stayed in Bozeman and I'm there to this day. It was beautiful, beautiful place to live.
Good alt bike scene?
I would say so. Might be a little too inclusive for my taste, but no.
What's the number one bike? What would you say the bike of the Bozeman scene is? Like, what bike do you see the most?
Probably
of?
The Super Something, the Sklar Super Something.
Okay.
There's a lot of them in Bozeman.
A lot of Sklar Super Somethings.
That or the Pivot Mach 429, something like that.
Oh, my God.
Full suspension. Ibis and Mojo,
so
something.
Would you say Bozeman?
Yeti, Infinity Link.
Bozeman more of a performance town?
Yeah, it kind of splits up. There's a distinct amount of commuter utility cyclists just kind of having fun, cruising around the town trails, running errands a lot. And then there's a transition that happens as soon as you leave town that, not for everyone, but...
The transition.
Transition into tech world. Tech mode.
Tech mode.
Fabrics. Tech bikes.
Okay.
Plastic everything.
Okay. Ooh. All right. All right. Keep it coming. Keep it coming.
Yeah. Adam kind of instilled in me a strict policy of no tech in town.
No more tech fabrics. We don't ride tech bikes in town.
Okay, so
not until you leave town.
Oh, this is interesting.
I still don't like any kind of tech fabric touching my body, but that's a personal thing.
So, as in out of town, as in no one's seeing you.
You're not wearing a puffy
picture,
in
you're
town.
Not taking pictures.
Ooh. Well, yeah,
this is good.
It's just a nice delineation to keep you know.
I like
keep
that.
your lives compartmentalized, as we know.
Mm.
It's great. Great approach to life. The more plentiful the boxes, the more integrated the human.
I think that really epitomizes it.
Yeah.
Lock it up, put it in a box.
Mm-hmm. Shove it down. Yeah.
All right. So
those ones great.
Yeah. So at this point in your life, you're an experienced mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
You're working at Alter in Bozeman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't want anyone to touch your bike but me. Don't allow any other human.
I've seen you at work. You've been on a few of my videos helping me out, most notably with the Alumilith on YouTube.
We did have a lot of fun.
Jory was helping me put that one together.
In the rat hole.
Yeah, out in the rat hole trying to get that thing done in time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate that you're just leaving because I basically have to make my
it's made time again.
It's made time now, and I got to...
I timed my visit perfectly.
Yeah, I got to cram this week. So that's basically what you're up to now.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Now, are you working on mostly, you know, hydraulic, electronic suspension bikes?
Yeah, absolutely.
At Alter, or are you working on cars? Or
hydraulic.
Both?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So this shop services everything.
We're exclusively a service shop. There's some new bikes that come out.
Okay, I got you.
All, but
really, it's service shop.
Mostly it's service.
One of the only ways you can make this work,
totally,
right?
Totally.
Now, do you intentionally ignore people when they come in and just kind of be like, you know,
we politely decline some bikes that maybe come from a certain overnight mail order service.
Canyon?
That I know you like a lot.
Canyon? But yeah, I got tons
no,
of canyons.
No, canyons. We work on canyons all the time. You know, certain e-bikes.
All right. Amazon bikes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
We'll do it.
We'll do it.
The owner of the shop just can't say no. So
we had
just do whatever.
We had a listener mail that came in last week, noting that they appreciated that we were that we pointed out that bicycle shops are all equal opportunity discriminators.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know. That, but basically,
as soon as you leave, we're talking shit.
For sure. Okay, all right. This is good to have an actual bike shop lackey here.
A peek behind the curtain.
A little peek behind the curtain.
No. Yeah, we work on everything.
Yeah.
I honestly don't discriminate against e-bikes at all. I love e-bikes. I've had some really fun times there.
This listener was saying that they're just thrilled to work on an actual bike these days because most of what comes through the door are e-bikes, like really junky e-bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I'd say it's only like a 20-80 split for real bikes being at 80%.
Yeah. So looking to stay in Bozeman long term?
Yeah, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Having a good time. Got a really great community there.
Give a little shout out to your band, Stone Fruit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does occupy a lot of my time.
Mm-hmm.
Stone Fruit, the new album, Good News Only, is out now on every streaming service imaginable.
I'm listening to it right now.
We Jory just finished our
drums.
First tour.
You're the drummer. You do any songwriting?
I get in there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, write some melodies here and there.
And we did get an opportunity to have you lend your skin whacking skills to Bone Mill.
To the Bone Mill.
Which is our local band here.
Mm-hmm. We joined forces and had a little recording session. Had a little
nice
session.
That was nice.
At Dietz's, a little
pizza
session.
It's been
a
really good visit here.
It has been
that we
great
get to say on your last day. So just great that we had you on the pod. So thanks for the little intro there, Jory.
Of course.
So you're going to stick with us now as we go through some listener mail.
I would love to.
All right.
Let's get into it.
The sound effect. Just hit a single button.
Okay.
We're going to answer some questions on nutrition and food that we use on our tours and long rides. We're going to say how to optimize your rim brakes. We're going to talk about tubes, tubeless, TPUs, latex, etc.
Oh boy.
And are wide bars a fad? Wide drop bars. I'd say wide any bar. Is it a fad?
Mm.
And maybe if we get to it, crank sets that are fairly easy to find on eBay that you could turn into wide range doubles.
What?
So I won't let give Aria some airtime here.
How about I ask the questions and you two can be the
Well, I think we could start by what do you bring on, say, that 100-mile ride that you did last week?
Oh, okay. So getting right into the food.
Nutrition here. Yeah. What did you bring with you?
I had 3 hard-boiled eggs. I actually brought 2. I had one before. And protein.
Do you keep these, like, how do you keep them from breaking?
I had them in my jersey pocket in the back.
Okay.
So, you know, it's because I was going over some bumpy stuff. It wasn't all road. And I had an apple, a banana. I had salt, little salt packet that I got from the movie theater for the eggs. I had a bean and cheese burrito, a stroop waffle, and I think I'm probably forgetting some things, but that was the big stuff.
Now, did you stop anywhere and get some food?
And I ran out of food. I ate all of that by mile 75.
Okay.
And I just did like gas station stop and got a Coca-Cola and a Snickers bar.
Classic.
And that got me to the end, like zipped right to the end. But I think it's different to do like a big day ride where you're not stopping as much than like a bike tour.
Of course.
Jory and I, last time we saw each other, we were on the Tour Divide and I was packing much different there. So on a tour like that where you're kind of racing but you might have time, actually no, that's pretty much gas station food, isn't it, Jory?
Depends on the section. Yeah,
yeah, at, it's mostly
or leftovers from a lodge or restaurant or something.
Yeah, that would be like a cush meal is leftovers, but mostly it's gas station burritos, like a bunch of nuts if they have. They also have hard-boiled eggs in gas stations, like those packets. It's not the best stuff to fuel your ride, and Ron is like secretly horrified. He's going into his
not
safe
secretly.
Space.
Sleeves upon sleeves of, you know, Milano cookies.
They got Pepper's Farm out there?
Yeah, they sure do.
Oh, yeah, usually.
They don't have Simple Mills, which is Ron's favorite brand, but sometimes they do. I'll do those like energy blocks, the little chews, the energy chews, because you need it. Mm-hmm. But on a tour that's a little more chill, you would do like the bag of beans or, you know, like Tasty Bites and cook it over. Ron would normally forage during our day because there's almost always like mustard greens out there. Yeah. You might even find nettles if you're lucky. There's almost always like chickweed.
It becomes like a fun thing to kind of occupy your brain a little bit too while you're on these long tours, is looking for wild edibles and learning more about them. And it helps because it's really hard to keep fresh produce while you're touring. And so
impossible.
If you could just find it growing along the way, then you don't have to worry about refrigeration.
Exactly.
And so, you know, there's a few greens are really, greens are really hard to poison yourself with because it's, you know, you just follow, you know, if it tastes like, it's true.
Tell
it's like,
Taco Bell that.
Yeah, tell Taco Bell that.
Poison the entire nation.
Just wash them, please. So, you know, it's, you know, greens are something you could generally, you know, if you learn how to identify a few key things, you'll end up finding them everywhere.
Cook it over a fire
and we do cook
substantially.
All the
so
don't
it,
eat anything raw.
Yeah. Don't eat raw greens as much. And then we would normally do like egg sandwiches or something in the morning because I don't like oatmeal every single day. But
I
need to have tea and coffee in the morning, like warm tea. So I'd carry packets of honey and milk. They also have those packets of like already everything is in the packet masala chai, which I really liked. But that gave me diarrhea after a while, so I had to stop that. But yeah, I think you can pretty much pack whatever you want. I wouldn't go all like ultra processed bars and like energy chews or whatever. I would do apples and bananas wherever you could find them, and you could pretty much find bananas at every gas station these days. Sometimes oranges are really nice to have, you know, like fresh whole foods wherever you can find it is very
you
good.
You do sugar really well.
I love the sugar. I love the sugar.
I think it's just because you've had so much sugar your whole life that your body just must be really good at. Whereas me, I feel like I do not feel good on sugar.
Yeah. You weren't raised on gulab jamuns.
It's more emotional, though. I think there's an emotional component.
Emotional component to the sugar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what do you mean?
I think you've probably been reprimanded for consuming sugar. Mm. Body Bone's great on sugar, Ron. It's
I have I have a thing where I like to consume as much nutrient density as possible. And so if I'm going to eat something, especially when my body is stressed, like I feel like I need to do I need to do my best by it. And so I try to, the more I stress my body, the more compelled I am, the more hyper-focused I am on taking care of it.
Yeah. You do like food as medicine and I do food for joy and emotion.
Right.
So I think that's a big difference. I think
the medicine part for me is part of the joy and emotion.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. And so, for me, it's Snickers bars. So it's a little bit different.
So I'll fuel myself off of. Like I'll try, you know, in the gas, because oftentimes you are relegated to gas stations. So you got to, I've been reading nutrition facts and ingredient lists since I was an early teenager. And I still do it everything to this day. I read the back of it before I eat it. And I'm very careful. I feel like maybe I've been a little bit better about that, better about just letting go of that.
You've taught me a lot, though, and it is pretty incredible once you start thinking about, you know, food as medicine, how much non-medicine is in readily available foods. I mean, everything is canola oil, everything is sugar. I try to take a more, like, you know, all the way on the other side approach to Ron just for balance. But, you know, Ron and I really see eye to eye on this. Like, there is a reason why food deserts exist and why, like, food-related issues, health issues pop up in mostly poor neighborhoods. Like, there's definitely reasons for that. So have good critique of that, but also don't get too personally food-shamey because you still need to eat and still have joy in what you eat and, like, have treats as well. Yeah.
I don't have motivation to ride unless there's something – you know, ready for me, not ready for me, but something that I can look forward to at the end of the ride. Like I can turn myself inside out if I need to, if I know that there is something good.
Swimming hole and pizza.
Swimming hole and pizza.
I should go straight for the Häagen-Dazs.
Something bubbly.
Only
to
five,
drink.
Five ingredients. So.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Like,
you can find those things.
I think you can find those things. If it's simple ingredients and there isn't a lot, that's the best way to go,
but,
I think.
Yeah, but I'm basically, you know, when I'm on tour, it's nuts for me. And when you're eating that many nuts, don't eat them raw because the body, you know, I can't digest that many raw nuts. They got to be roasted or sprouted or something like that because it becomes such a big part of my diet while I'm out there away from my kitchen, my Whole Foods delivery at home.
If you're eating a bunch of nuts, is there something to balance that out with that you can eat, like cheese or?
Yeah, you know, I think hard cheeses are another thing.
Parmesan.
Parmesan is a great readily available one, you know.
Find sharp cheddar anywhere too.
Yeah, those are always good. I like to go more like high fat and fiber. And just because I'm looking for a more steady stream of energy, I can't remember any time I've ever really bonked. So I don't have low blood sugar, I guess. I'm not looking, my body's not craving sugar. It's just craving something like sustenance, like slow burning stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I like fats for that.
Fiber and
some
fat.
Fiber. I'm all thinking about stuff that you can get readily available out there. So, you know, like when I can find good bread, whether it's like sprouted or sourdough, whole wheat, I love making, you know, almond butter and jelly sandwiches, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, cashew butter and jelly sandwiches, whatever I could find. Those are like my favorite type of energy bar. Whenever I'm going on a long ride, I usually pack like three of those with like Ezekiel sprouted bread.
Mm-hmm.
And
one of my favorite things that you make are the snackums. He calls them snackums. They're corn tortillas that are heated up a little bit with hummus in the middle.
Or if you don't have refrigeration, just avocado.
Just avocado. Oh, yeah. Straight up avocado is great fat,
avocado,
isn't it?
Avocado tacos.
And just you can, yeah, avocado tacos, hot sauce.
That's the best. The best. Like if you're just looking for something that doesn't take up a lot of room and you could prepare at the end of a hard day with minimal, you know, implements, it's the just a taco. It's just, so you just need your tortillas, you need your avocado, you need your bag of beans or can of beans, and you need your Cholula.
Yeah.
And so those, that right there, and then you roast up some like dandelion greens that you found on the side of the road or something.
Yeah.
Put a little salt in there. You got your protein, you got your fats, you got your macro and micronutrients, you got your carbohydrates all there. You know, a nixtamalized corn that they make tortillas out of is basically a superfood.
Mm. I mean, honestly, avocados, I just eat them with a spoon straight up.
Yeah. Right.
It's got everything you need. It's like the best red food, really.
Yeah. You just got to keep them from getting squished in your bag. But, you know, that there are ways you do that.
Just pack a meal going.
Yeah, pack them like in with your soft stuff so they don't get all split apart.
And then
for breakfast, you know, probably I always take along some sprouted oats with me or something. Or if they're not sprouted, I'm making overnight oats. I'm soaking them. Because all these, for me, I'm trying to make everything as digestible as possible. Because you're stressing your body. Like you need to make it easy for your body to operate and so that you could do this stuff long term. And so, yeah, for me, I'm doing overnight oats. I'm putting oats. I'm not using instant oats either because those are really high on the glycemic index. They're kind of an ultra processed oat product.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for just straight rolled oats because that's what's going to cook the quickest. I'm probably going to soak them in water overnight. Add a little bit of honey because you use honey in your oats. I mean, in your tea in the morning. So we always have honey with us.
Yeah.
I'm adding some salt. I'm adding some olive oil. Olive oil or coconut oil. Those are my oils.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's basically what we're eating out here, folks.
Yeah.
We should probably move on to another question.
I mean, oils. we really don't do like gels or.
No, don't do any gels because my teeth, I have bad teeth. I have colonist teeth.
Yep.
You know, our bones.
Colonizer, yeah. You're a colonizer.
Yeah. My bones here are made of cornbread.
They are.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, my dentist, even though I don't eat sugar, like I don't eat much sugar, my dentist all along would be like, you must drink a lot of those sugary sports drinks, huh? I'm like, no, I don't. I just have made of cornbread.
Meanwhile, I never have cavities. And I'm a sugar hole.
Sugar hole.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, I've stayed off those drinks since I was a teenager and I don't do any. Yeah, like high carb drinks or anything like that.
Do you do that?
I drink whole milk in my sports drink. Every vitamin, every electrolyte, sugar, protein, fat, burns clean.
Jory is way into raw whole milk.
It doesn't have to be raw.
Are you putting this in your water bottle?
Gently pasteurized is okay too, but single herd origin.
Are you putting this in your water bottle?
Absolutely not. Okay. The water bottle in my stomach. I'll drink a half.
That would turn into whipped cream, wouldn't it?
It could actually.
Or I could curdle.
Shake it really well.
Yeah, if it kind of gets inoculated with the urine that you've used into pee in your water bottle previously. Mm-hmm. Let's get this out of the way. I'm surprised I didn't ask you this. Do you pee in your water bottles instead of getting out of your sleeping bag?
I know. I'll get up. I'll jump right out. I'm usually a bivy guy, so it's really not. I just will stand up.
Stand up in your bivy?
No, I'll get out of the bivy. You'll do all that? Usually, yeah.
Why not just pee in one of the bottles?
Hey, people have different pee practices, okay?
I've done it in extreme cases.
Okay. All right.
But for the most part, I'm going to just stand up.
Yes, we're weirdos.
Mm-hmm. Back to the milk thing, though. Jory, you did say milk was one of the most hydrating liquids. Mm-hmm.
This is not, you know, this is Jory.
It's an exact science.
This is, I wouldn't.
It's a chart I saw.
It's a chart
milk
that he
scored
saw.
The highest on its hydrating potential.
Jory's last name is Hoodgaitis, so
Hoodgaitis. I guess
he comes from the Hood line and the Gaitis line.
Guidas. I thought it was Guidas.
Guidas. I think that's a local thing. Yeah. Straight up dairy industry.
Dairy industry insider right here.
Yeah,
this guy JK. is on bovine
growth
hormone.
Look it up. Look up the milk thing. For
me, I don't drink any milk products unless they're fermented. But I don't drink, I don't eat a lot of things unless they're fermented.
That's true.
But that's just me.
Well, thank you for that big rundown on nutrition and food. I think that's a big one. Let's get into the other stuff. What do we think about optimizing canty breaks? Because we had someone ask this question because they can't break fast enough. Granted, they did say that they got their pieces from AliExpress. They live in Italy. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So
I wonder what the breaks were.
They're pretty simple. I'm sure they could probably get them dialed in.
Yeah. I can pull that one up. But
leverage ratio is important. That's the first thing to check.
I think he did say that he had looked at the Sheldon Brown's Mechanical Advantage landmark paper that you could find on SheldonBrown.com. But that's where I've learned how to set up cantilevers. And for me, it was the in-between. You know, cantilevers were king for a long time. V-brakes inserted themselves in the situation just briefly in the timeline before disc brakes took over. For me, the industry push towards disc brakes is understandable because it gives the whole industry
countless benefits.
Jordan would say countless benefits as he is a disc brake. He's a disc brake guy over here. Big disc brake guy over here. For me, it's
squeaks about it all the time.
Oh, nice one, man. That was a burn.
Squeaking here, squeaking there. Yeah. My pads are almost gone. Shut up, very old pads.
I'm just saying because my disc bike is squeaking all the time too. So
for me, like disc brakes were, they were a great thing to sell. And I could see why they've taken over because they're easier to serve. They're easier. It's just like an easier setup for a lot of places. It's just they're a lot easier to work
stop
on.
Stop better, a lot of devoted braking surface.
It's all that.
Wheels, all of that.
Yeah. But overkill for most. To me, the simplicity of just a standard rim brake bike is unmatched. And any riding that I do, I've never felt underbraked in my entire life, honestly, on a rim brake bike. I've never been like, ooh, I wish I had this, unless descending like a mountain in the wintertime and I went through a creek crossing and got my rims wet and then they turned to ice and then you have no brakes.
Which has happened.
Which has happened, but
to the both of us.
That's it. That's a rarity.
It's absolutely real.
The rest of the time, I enjoy a much simpler bicycle maintenance schedule and a better looking bike, a lighter bike,
more
flexible
rim
bike.
Replacement.
No rim replacement. That is a fallacy. So, I don't have to. I replace my rim brake pads maybe once every 2 years, whereas a disc brake, depending on where you're riding, you may have to replace them every 4 months or less. So, it's just disc brakes aren't a thing for me. I'm just not into them. And
well, if we could answer this
answer the question.
instead of philosophizing.
To simplify it. Yeah, personal beef. To simplify it here.
Person did say that they are converting a 90s MTB into a sort of gravel nonsense using AliExpress micro new briefers.
I can definitely say some common places to look at optimization. Some low-hanging fruit would be cable pull ratio. Okay. Make sure the lever is short. The shorter, the better for canties.
If you're using cantilevers, long pull if you're using V-brakes.
Optimizing your straddle cable, you want a right angle, a nice 90-degree angle,
or less. You know, that we're talking mechanical advantage or more. Is that how that goes?
A more obtuse angle.
No, you want an acute angle.
From way up top?
Well, depending upon if you're doing a like a classic style cantilever where it's a high, like a, not a low profile cantilever but like Mayfac or like a neo retro canty, you want to have your yoke up high. That's how you're going to get a more acute angle between the arm and the straddle cable. That's going to give you a higher mechanical pull ratio. Now when you're doing it on a Jordan's been perhaps more technically sufficient in all things than I am, but he's giving me 100%. A little fro of his eyebrow. So if you're doing high profile canties, set that yoke up high. If you're doing now, most people just set it up high no matter what, and I'm just like, that is not going to work.
Ideally, you just want that right angle between the arm and
the straddle gate.
You're looking for a right angle.
That's going to be your maximum mechanical.
Now, the way you do that on a low-profile canny is setting that yoke down as low as possible.
Quite low. Not dragging on the tire.
Not dragging, but that's not going to hurt it. You know, it's only going to hurt, you know, your mud clearance or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, within reason, I should say. And
this listener did say that they have lowered the yoke as much as possible, cleaned the rim.
So that would be brake pads.
Pad.
You got to get good brake pads. A lot of the like crappy brakes and old brakes.
What are the best pads?
I mean, Cool Stop.
Cool Stop.
Right,
okay.
It's right there in the name, Cool Stop Salmon. Mm-hmm. So you know that's gonna increase the
perpendicularity to the rim braking surface as well. A lot of times people set it with those little spherical washers going like this or like this and not perfectly up in the slot. You want when those arms come in, they're just hitting. Mm-hmm. Perfectly perpendicular inches.
Yeah, there's a significant amount of setup that goes into cantilevers that scares a lot of people away. That's just cause, you know. So it's a lot of the last generation of cantilevers had that. Shimano had their own. That their straddle cable was fixed, and I don't think it was always in the best of ways because it kind of. I've used some very poorly modulating cantilevers from that era.
Totally.
And I think it just confused the heck out of people. They couldn't customize it depending upon how wide your rim is, you know, is also can
you're swapping washers.
Yeah,
and
right. Right. Exactly. You know, so there's a lot of factors that go in here. And then everyone moves to V-brakes. And V-brakes are super easy to set up. V-brakes have that right angle built in on top of a very high leverage arm. So V-brakes being a linear pull, you're solving a lot of issues there that cantilevers had. Way easier to set up, way easier to maintain, really a great efficient brake, any kind of V-brake. But not to say that you can't set up a cantilever and have the same power as a V-brake or similar power as a V-brake.
And satisfaction when grabbing the lever too. So a properly set up V-brake can really scratch that itch.
Oh, yeah. You're powerful.
Hits hard. That's
so,
what I'm breaking for.
So, yeah, I guess with this listener, I would suggest finding some Cool Stop brake pads. That's a big part of it. Make sure they're not old, you know, because, you know, as we all know, rubber, you know, degrades over time, becomes harder.
And depending on the width of the rim, make sure to get your washer spacer configuration appropriate so that the part that's holding the pad is parallel up and down. You don't want it leaning in by the time the pad is hitting or way out. You want it as close to parallel to the fork blades as possible when it's hitting.
So go to sheldonbrown.com, Mechanical Advantage.
It's all there.
Print it out, paste it on your walls, study it. There will be a quiz. All right, next.
Next up is we're going to go like by the bike, right? So we talked about brakes. Let's talk about the bars. Are wide bars a fad? How wide is too wide for comfort? Now, remember when the UCI implemented that bar length for everyone?
Wide bars is an interesting subject because you have pro road racing and gravel being on a performance riding. You have on the extreme opposite end of the wide bar spectrum where you have the narrowest bars possible. In the alt bike world and mountain bike world, you have the widest bars possible. And so where is the in-between? Well, I guess the in-between, the in-between would be like a 46, 48 millimeter wide drop bar. Centimeter.
Yeah.
Wide at the extreme end. Well, you know, it's when 10 years ago, 10 year anniversary here of the leather bar, as we first called it. And that then became the towel rack. Coined by Bicycle Pubes.
Which was how wide?
Well, I started with an arbitrary number, 666. It is not a human number.
Just pulled it out of a hat.
It is not a human number. And so I sent that to Matt at Crust, and I said, I want a wide drop bar because I had been riding only the Nitto Noodle in size 46 that I would flare out more so I could get the widest bar possible to fit my huge bags. And so Matt had this handlebar made. It came to me and it looked just like a It looked just like a Nitto random earring bar, but it was 666 centimeters wide. And I have a photo of it. I'll put it in the show notes of me getting this handlebar 10 years ago and holding it out in front. And it looks like it's as wide as I am tall. Matt, I remember Matt saying he was coming from New Jersey with it and he was taking the train up and he's like, I can't even fit it on the train.
Yeah,
he thought it was so. And I get those handlebars, and to me, I put those on my bike. I was like, "Wow, this is comfortable." And I was able
to turn your bike into a shopping cart.
Turn my bike into a shopping cart. Yeah, and you know, really in the beginning, there it was all about fitting that giant, the large Fabio's chest, which also came out 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so, just incorporating, I was kind of building the handlebar around the bag. I got a lot of questions back then about, wow, this handlebar is way too wide. Is it too wide? And I said, well, maybe you're thinking too narrowly, you know, widen your horizons, exactly. Expand. And, you know, I don't think it's any, you know, any stretch of the imagination stretch that all the handlebars at this point have been stretched. Mm-hmm. To me, it was a real moment a few years ago where I got to ride a friend's bike and it had a Ritchie handlebar on it. I think like the Beacon or it was wider. It was like wider than 666. And mm-hmm. I was like, holy cow. Like mm-hmm. this is like, there are like handlebars are freaking wide now.
But nowadays they're shrinking back down.
Well,
it's like very popular.
I've been shrinking back down for the last 5 years, mm-hmm. but it's a train. You have to train. Like I realized how weird those handlebars look.
Now there's some bikes I was servicing at the shop that had a 140 millimeter stem and maybe a 34.
Well, that's ball. We're talking gravel. We're talking that's the other end of the spectrum.
Tilted in hoods.
That's the performance.
That's essentially aero.
Aero
bars.
That's the other end of the spectrum. I mm-hmm. wouldn't say that's the alt bike spectrum whatsoever.
Oh no. Totally.
Yeah. That's the racer end of the mm-hmm. pointy end of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas in alt bike, it's all about wide bars.
It's Tour Divide alt bike.
I'm sorry?
Would Tour Divide be alt-bike?
Yeah. I think, non-racing. If you're racing, you got to have your aero bars, I mm-hmm. guess. Otherwise, you'll have nerve damage.
Totally.
Racing is definitely incorporated into alt-bike. Alt-bike is all just holistic cycling. Mm-hmm. Are you in mm-hmm. it for sport or are you in it for lifestyle?
Mm-hmm. It's a Venn diagram with sport and mm-hmm. Alt, and in the middle there might be the Tour Divide bikes,
right,
it crosses over.
So these wide handlebars for me getting out of
one. Or some of the cool gravel bikes too.
Getting out of wide handlebars for me was you can't just do it. Just like I had to wean myself off centimeter by centimeter.
Never go more than a centimeter a year
over the past 5 years. But my road bike, both of my road bikes, two of my gravel bikes, like they're all on 38 millimeter centimeter handlebars. 38 is what I went to. Now I am built like a missile. Like I don't have shoulders. So it's something that
I'm looking at him now. There's nothing there.
There's nothing there. So I can go pretty narrow.
Yes, you have sloping shoulders,
but they're very narrow. Also,
they're narrow.
They're made of cornbread.
Mm-hmm. They're also made of cornbread.
Flexi.
So you know, going narrow for me wasn't a big deal.
You also stretch every night, which I mm-hmm. think helps if you're going to go really quick into mm-hmm. something.
I just wanted to decrease my frontal area because I'm getting older and I want to ride faster because mm-hmm. I want to see more things.
So you want to be more aero.
And we stopped touring for the most part, so I don't have to have a large bag on the front of my bike. Fair. Like Tour Divide, you know, like something like that, or just our old lifestyle. I needed that large chest in front.
Because our whole life was in there.
Our whole life was mm-hmm. in there. Mm-hmm. And so the handlebars, I don't
know. Lintels in there.
And I'm a drop mm-hmm. bar guy. I'm a drop bar guy. You know, I overwhelmingly have drop bars on nearly all of my bikes. And so that drop bar had to be wide to fit it all. And it was supremely comfortable to have all those hand positions. So I don't, you know, depending upon your use case, I don't think you can. Like, you know, like wide bars are great. It's your use case scenario. Mm-hmm. If you want to go a little bit faster, you got to decrease your frontal area.
Constraints you're working.
Yeah, it's constraints. You know, it depends on what kind of bike.
Mm-hmm. You want more stuff to fit on your cockpit, you know,
right.
Because when you're touring, you mm-hmm. need your little Garmin, you need your mm-hmm. like accessories up there. You'd be surprised at how quickly you fill up mm-hmm. a wide bar setup if you're on tour.
And you're touring the way that we're touring, aerodynamics are not a factor.
At all.
At all. You're going 10 miles an hour, folks.
At the fastest.
At the fastest. So just have a comfortable bar. And if that bar is wide, that's That's great because you've think about it, double the width, double the hand positions.
How big of a flat screen TV can you fit on those bars on tour? So you could just be watching Love Island as you go.
Yes, precisely.
Think about it.
Yeah, you can make
an
this,
iPad on there.
Yeah,
yeah,
you can make this so much more enjoyable.
All right, let's
so
move
not
on.
A fad, not a fad. I feel like there's room for everything. You know, we live in this. We you could have it all right now. And I think that we should really take advantage of that because look at all we don't have.
Mm-hmm. Just look at Love Island.
Look at Love Island.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at the poor people on Love Island.
Yeah. Actually, they're doing just fine. Thank you. Carlin and I are very happy. Any last words, Jory, on the what's your final take on the wide drop handlebars?
Yeah, I think that you're working within some constraints, be it cargo carrying capacity, body dimensions, aerodynamic concerns. They all kind of bump up against each other in a little triangulation of butter zone.
Butter
somewhere
zone.
In there.
Mm-hmm. Butter zone.
You're going to find the bar for you. I generally err on the side of slightly wider commercially available bars. I don't do a lot of mods, but...
Yeah, what's on your super something?
Right now, I'm everything I'm on. The one out there is I have those Envy gravel bars. They're extremely comfortable. Carbon fiber bars really up the comfort level a lot. But on every bike at home, I'm a noodle guy, 48 centimeter noodle.
Which is, to me, an
unmodded.
Extremely wide bar.
Mm-hmm.
Noodles.
Yeah, 48 noodles for me are...
No flare on
don't
it.
Have, I came from the noodle off of like a Dedekoff cockpit in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And the noodle changed my life. And since
didn't you,
then...
Didn't you grab that long ramp? You have so all that
I like
ramp
that long ramp, but nowadays
like,
I like the randonneuring bars.
Yeah.
Where if I'm going to do long ramp, I like the randonneuring bars because they already have a built-in flare. They have like a little bump on top.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little bit. I like them better than the noodle.
Mm-hmm.
The noodle for me, I don't like how it kind of the top of the bar kind of goes downwards, slopes downwards. Mm-hmm. Like I want that top of the bar to go upwards, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
So
aesthetically, which is probably another area that should bump into that sweet spot butter zone. You know, what's the bike looking like as you're staring at it from afar when you spot it?
Yeah.
Exiting the Natty G's and you're looking for a ride and you think, God, that bike looks good.
Mm-hmm. How's it sit?
That's important.
Yeah. How's
that's
it right. sitting
how's
out there?
How's the stance?
Yep.
That's
yep.
right. That's right.
So yeah, that's a big deal.
You find your sweet spot in the constraints.
Mm-hmm.
Always the most asked question, right? Mm-hmm. On bike picks.
What bar are those? Mm-hmm. I change my handlebars constantly. There is no right answer. Like you gotta get a bunch of rolls of new bombs in your bike, in your shop, your home.
Buy
shop.
It at Costco.
Mm-hmm. You buy that new bombs at Costco because you're going to be switching bars a lot.
Mm-hmm. New bars, new bike, I always say. Yep, okay, absolutely. Let's move on to tubes, tubeless, and TPU.
Oh, a great question.
Talk to me about these three T's.
Yeah, for me, tubeless was a big game changer, and I was in on the ground floor when you had to make your...
We're talking Elmer's glue.
Yeah, we're talking real early days of tubeless. I was there
what
for
year?
It. I'm going to say 2009 again. 2009
okay.
is
all
when
right.
I did my first tubeless setup.
Yeah, Barack Obama was
and
president.
And you had to get the stands,
good
like
times.
It was a stands insert that you put onto your rim.
Oh, before even that.
Cafe latex and glitter, but you had your
cut tube.
The cut tube. Well, that was ghetto tubeless, but you can't say that anymore.
You just did.
I'm surprised you just did.
I did because I'm a shock jock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ron Limbaugh.
Yeah. So
Ron Limbaugh.
So you know, I wasn't gonna say it, but you brought it up.
I'm sorry.
So the first official tubeless product would be the that little rim bed.
It's a gorilla tape.
Well, gorilla tape came out. Gorilla tape still works to this day. Like I have, you're a bike mechanic, so you don't like gorilla tape because you're just too stuck.
Why don't
up.
You? Okay, calm down.
It seems like
Rush.
It really loves. I don't know if it's just anecdotal evidence for me, but it seems like every gorilla tape rim strip I pull off. Reaction that happens with the glue and the sealant and especially aluminum nipples that it just absolutely eats them away. There's just powder left.
Mm-hmm.
Stands tape, plastic tape, rim strips, all the other stuff. It can get sealant leaked in there.
And it will.
And it will. But it doesn't seem to have that same corrosive potency as the
Gorilla tape. You're saying Gorilla tape short term, definitely better.
Gorilla tape does a pretty good job.
Because I've had
that permanent stuff.
Yeah.
The heavy permanent stuff really gets a good seal. But I don't know what it is with the Gorilla tape adhesive. Some kind of chemical reaction that happens. I don't know. Maybe I'm just noticing things where there's nothing, but
could be with a certain sealant.
It really eats those nipples up. I mean, they're just
eats the brass nipple or aluminum nipples.
What sealant are you using?
Primarily Stans. Mostly Stans is all we're doing. But I mean, you see everything come through the shop. But yeah,
I've been using Gorilla tape on my tubeless setups off and on since 2009.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I found that I still have some rims that I set up in 2009. If I set them up today, they would still work with that Gorilla tape, same Gorilla tape.
Mm-hmm.
If I had left on just, you know, a Stans or a Terravail or a Melkoff rim strip, you got to check those pretty much every time you take the tire off.
You have to be careful taking the tire off for sure. You don't want
to push it to the side. Yeah. It slides off. It's a really finicky.
Now, click-in rim strips.
I couldn't believe your click-in rim strip.
I set up a race casing 2-inch tire with a pump.
Without even taking out the valve core.
Didn't even remove the valve core. Just aired it right up.
Tubeless is a mistress, a cruel, cruel mistress.
Again, trade-offs.
There are so many trade-offs with tubeless, just like those trade-offs with tubes. Your trade-offs with tubeless are a bit more complicated, not a bit more, but much more complicated. I think it's after running tubeless for a while, if you've done those with all your bikes, the second you got to just change a tube out in the field, it's quaint. Because you're like, wow, I just got to change this tube and it's done. Whereas tubeless, the variables is a laundry list. It could be a rim strip, could be your valve core, could be the sidewall, tear. It could be a puncture. It could be weeping. You know, there's so many different things. Could, you know, it's on and on and on, and it can drive you crazy. So I say if you're going to have, you know, I always have like one bike set up tubeless, maybe two out of like maybe the 10 bikes. No, I should say out of all my bikes in the barn, there's probably only like 6 that are ever ready to ride. And I'd say out of those 6, 2 are going to be tubeless. The rest are going to be tubed. My Rivendells are, I'm not concerned with their speeds. So those are going to be butyl tubes. I was formerly a big latex tube fan with my road bikes. But I think from my experience, any latex tube that is available on the market today is likely 10 years old at this point, and they're not making any new ones.
Yeah.
And so they just spontaneously fail for no reason at all.
Yeah.
It's just been
sitting on that bike shop shelf for
a long time. Yeah. So I would not, at this point, I just flat out would not trust any latex tube out there anymore, unfortunately, because I did love the way they rode.
Yeah.
So, you know,
the feeling on the hand is really nice too.
Right,
it feels really great on the hand. But if you could take them and turn them into like tube tops or something, that would be cute. Some dresses.
Generally pink. Yeah.
It'll be beautiful. But dusty.
The TPU thing has really intrigued me in these past few years.
Wait, before we get to the TPU, when would you definitely go with a tubeless versus a tubed?
Out west.
Right.
Out west, especially if there's going to be goat heads.
Cactus.
Yeah. Places where, you know, everything is like on the East Coast here, everything has kind of been mowed down by the glaciers. Like our rocks aren't nearly as sharp.
Yep.
You can get away with running real light tires. And so you can get away with oftentimes with running, you know, a TPU tubed light casing tire without any issues. But out west, things are a little different.
What do you think in Montana, Jory?
Oh, I don't touch tubes of any type whatsoever.
Okay.
Everything's tubeless for me. I've done some pretty, you know, coarse and abrasive riding in Montana. There's a lot of it.
Yeah.
A lot of chunky rocks.
Yeah.
Some desert, some thorns, but tubeless has just been, I don't touch my tires. I install them. I might add a little sealant through the life of the tire till the tread's gone. Then I pull it. Tape's usually fine. I've got tape that's been on there for
professionally installed here, folks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Professionally installed tape. It is all about the technique when you're installing the tape.
Yeah.
That makes a huge difference.
So I would bring your wheels to a professional to have that tape job done. Mm-hmm.
And if
unless you're really good at it.
Well, even the professionals, I've seen some horrible things out there. Passed off as professionals.
I had a real bad one. Mm-hmm. More recently, where you know,
loose, I was wrinkly.
I was just like, oh my god, and I knew it wasn't going to work, but I tried it anyway, and it didn't work.
Mm-hmm. It's rough out there.
It's rough out there. So you're tubeless all the way,
all
day long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now
every bite.
Now you know there. I remember a ride that we went on in Arizona where I was on a 26 where you couldn't have a tubeless setup, so to speak. So I was not that I would have, but I was running that muck off strawberry flavored sealant inside my tubes.
Was this the? May I suggest a figure eight? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I take a tube for those kind of like extreme situations because there's always the option.
Uh-huh. But I was getting punctures left and right.
Yeah,
and
we were 5 deep.
Things seal. I mean, this happens with tubeless setups too. Things will seal, and then you leave your bike out in the sun and the direct sunlight, and that sunlight, that UV, melts the little the hole that you know through the hole that your tubeless sealant just sealed, and then all your air goes out. Mm-hmm. So I always say that, especially with light casing tires, keep them out of the sun, like no direct sunlight, and also don't store your bike with the tires on the ground either. If it's going to be a week or so, especially because your tubeless setup is not as airtight as like a Butyl tube. Like you're gonna lose air, and the more you lose air, and the more that you know, the tire just sits on a crease, the more it's going to degrade, because the sealant also degrades the sidewall.
That's the other thing is also I'm always replacing valve cores frequently.
People get
as soon as I'm feeling like there's like a little bit of a slow leak or something, I'll just replace the valve core preemptively without even trying to find it with the soapy water and everything. And it's almost always the valve core.
A lot of old Dynamico customer service questions. People being like, my tires just won't hold air. What is going on? Mm-hmm. And I mean, 8 times out of 10, it's the valve core.
Okay.
And they want to blame it on the tire. Yeah.
Even the valve too, the little rubber stopper on the back. Yes. I've seen that failed more than a couple of times when it gets nutted down really nice and tight. And kind of pulls it through, and you get a little micro fracture in that rubber core.
There are so many factors in tubeless. Really, folks, I would not recommend it unless you know what you're doing. So overwhelmingly, tubes.
Or if you like process and understand.
It's a lot of process, but there's
the
like to me even now, like I've been doing tubeless since 2009, and I'm still like I still go back and forth. Mm-hmm. So again,
you're a special case.
Yeah,
you are a special case because you do have so many bikes you juggle. Mm-hmm. There are so many moving parts in your life. I think your style is very different than Jory's style. Jory's very like organized and you know methodical, and you are more playful and you like to pull things and.
Half the time that tubeless sealant isn't even any good. We ran into this a lot being the pandemic. The shops ordered like tons of sealant, and that sealant has a shelf life.
True.
And Orange Seal is really good about it. They put an expiration date on the outside of there, but a lot of places don't.
Standard.
So oftentimes people are at a shop buying sealant that's 5, 6, 7 years old.
Mm.
And it's not gonna.
Would raw milk be a good substitute?
Probably better than
single herd origin. Yeah. Single herd origin is a great substitute.
It's true. Actually, it's true. It congeals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there you have it. Use milk.
So TPU.
Let's go to TPUs.
TPU.
Talk
about it.
What is it? TPUs. What is it?
What is TPU?
What's the acronym?
Oh, no, that's not what I meant.
Well,
I just
TPUs
mean,
are these new plastic tubes that are super light. They weigh like a third of what a Butyl tube weighs.
They fold down. They weigh
less than the tubeless sealant that you're putting in there. They fold down to nothing.
The size of a credit card.
Now, there are brands out there that are selling these things for $30 a pop.
Whoa.
I think $30 a pop at cost, I've seen some. I
mean, for one?
And you're
for
talking one. About thermoplastic polyurethane.
There we go. We're talking about thermoplastic polyurethane. So these tubes have very low rolling resistance, as low as latex. I think maybe less, but maybe slightly more than tubeless. Is that the consensus?
The tubes themselves?
Yeah. I'm saying when you're using, as far as rolling resistance goes, with So butyl is the worst.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
then it goes. Then it goes latex. Then it goes TPU, mm-hmm. and then slightly better is sealant.
It's tubeless.
Mm-hmm. Tubeless. Mm-hmm. So
marginally better.
Yeah, marginally better. We don't know how many pros out there are riding TPU is at this mm-hmm. point either. So, mm-hmm. but it's new to the newest kid on the block.
I have seen some pro bike checks that do include a tubeless setup with a rim strip and tubular glue bead along the edge of the rim.
Right.
Just to as extra insurance that that thing's not coming off.
Yeah. Now, this is a race setup.
That would be for Paris-Roubaix or something.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Wouldn't
be your day-to-day rig. There'd be a lot of maintenance.
You don't
necessarily even want to look at what the pros are riding because mm-hmm. they are not, their use not case relatable. Is so not relatable. Mm-hmm. They have
completely
a mechanic
unrelatable.
Mm-hmm. attending to their bike daily.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the TPU is the perfect balance between all of this. And I'm not paying $30 for a tube.
Talk about it.
I'll get these things straight from China. Okay. And
it's got a direct line.
Yeah. I mean,
a hole that you dug all the way.
They're you could look at the Ride Now ones are real popular. You get these for like $8 a tube or so. So I keep the Thick Vic or something, the yellow ones. I love it whenever during the spring fling, everyone was getting flats. And we kept on being like, oh, what color are you? Everyone's got their own color of like Amazon TPU or Alibaba TPU.
I did see your assemblage, your collection in there.
Yeah, yeah. I like the yellow ones, whatever those are.
I can tell.
I've had the fancier ones, like from Pirelli.
Mm-hmm.
They're no better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's been proven. So just get the cheap ones and get a lot of them. And, you know, they're fast, they're light. They're definitely perceivably faster for me than butyl. And you have to install them properly. A lot of people, I've seen a lot of biffed installations on these things where people put, you don't want to undersize it like a lot of people tend to do, oversize your TPU tubes. Shout out Ken Avery at Vittoria. Told me this little nugget, was telling me on a ride last year. He was like, what do you think the future, Ken? I hope you don't mind me sharing this. It's at the end of the set. It's a minute, an hour 30 in. I know you listen. He was claiming that the future of gravel is TPU and perhaps sealant inside TPU. But you can't undersize, you have to oversize your TPU. So if you oversize a butyl tube, the weight penalty is in the hundreds of grams.
Mm-hmm.
But if you oversize a TPU tube, the weight penalty is like in the tens of grams.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and TPU doesn't stretch like butyl. Mm-hmm. So the more you stretch it, the less supple it becomes also, because think about it, like when a material is a bit looser, it's softer, but when you stretch it out, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have a material like TPU where it's stretched to its maximum, like a drum, it's not flexible. You want that tube to be flexible so that you have, a more flexible ride.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when you're pulling a material tight like that, just like when you've got your tires overinflated, you're pulling your sidewall tight, so it's more susceptible to sidewall slashes. With TPU, it's the same thing.
Makes sense.
Don't want to stretch that material to its maximum, especially not TPU because it's not very stretchy.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's not stretchy, what about like when you're folding it up to the size of a credit card kind of, or your thin wallet? What about the valve core? When you fold it down, does that usually tear away from the...
It can. Yeah, it can. If you're not... It really used to happen with latex because latex gets real fragile.
I think that's my experience with the latex.
Yeah, yeah.
But does that happen a lot with the TPU, you reckon?
There are some valves that are better than others. Look for metal valves.
The metal ones are better than the plastic ones?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Always look for the metal valve.
I would think the opposite.
Right. And they usually come with like a little cover over the valve so that it doesn't like puncture the rest of the tube.
Right.
But, I don't want to pinch them like too tight in there. And always have, because in my saddle pack where I just wrap a tube and a bandana, I could fit, and for the space of one butyl tube, I could fit three TPUs.
Mm.
So I just pack three TPUs in that bandana in the back there. So I'm set.
Wow.
If I get a flat, I know what I'm doing. I'm replacing the tube.
Up to three times.
I'm not fucking around with spinning my wheel around trying to get the hole to seal. Like, you know, you know, it's just, it's like, oh, no, guys, I'll put a plug in. That's going to get me a few miles, I think. Mm-hmm. And then you're flat again and your ride partners are like, God damn it. Mm-hmm. Just put a tube in. No, I won't give up. I won't give up on this tubeless. Mm-hmm. I won't give up.
Give me some more bacon.
Yeah. More bacon. Another strip. Mm-hmm. Whereas you could just change a tube and be on your way in 5 minutes. So, or less.
And then you're always the one having to loan out your frame pump because no one else has one.
No one's got a frame pump.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's my frame pump. Have you used any TPU tubes? Do you have any?
Not on any
of my tubeless guy here.
You're a full tubeless guy. Only.
Yeah.
Okay.
Moving on down from the wheels to the crankstets, what are some wide-range doubles that are fairly easy to find on eBay?
Well, one of my favorite subjects, as we've touched on before, the crank is the centerpiece of the build, and you could ruin an entire build just on the crankset alone.
I agree. It's the heartbeat.
It's the heartbeat of the bike. Saddles are important, but you can cover your saddle by riding the bike. Can't do that with the crank. So, you know, the crank set for me, I like a five arm, you know, choose five arm. And forearms to me, forearm cranks, really the decline of human civilization.
Then you're thinking 110 BCD. That's what you're going.
I'm going 110. I'm 94 even more so.
94.
So really, folks, 94 is what you want. Now, these are the micro drive cranks, the compact crank, the compact little brother of the 110 BCD. 94 BCD, you can have, so the range that you, the smallest ring, so 110s are easily available. 110 five arm till the cows come home. 94 five arm, very rare. Not very rare, but just more rare. Expect to pay more for those,
and they're probably going to be pretty hammered.
Yeah, you know, so 110, what's the small, so we're basically changing a triple into a double here. Okay, so we're not concerned about the granny gear. We're just talking the two outer ring BCDs, the middle and the outer ring. So 110, I believe the smallest you can go is a 33. You got to get those from TA in France though. I keep a few in stock here just for my own stuff. But so if you're doing 110, which is a standard, you could do whatever you want on the outside. But I generally would run like a 48, 33 for a road bike with that kind of crankset. 48,
33.
But you're going to have a hard time finding that 33. Most of them are 34. So then when it comes to 94 BCD, okay, smaller bolt circle diameter, you can do whatever you want on the outside. I'll oftentimes do a 46. 29. Now that 29 tooth, again, you got to get that from TA in France. The 30 tooth is more readily available, but even so, that is to me a classic subcompact, you know, randonneuring gearing. That's the stuff that's in real life, real world scenarios where you have hills. That's generally the gear range that I have on all of my doubles.
And what kind of eBay search terms are you typing?
So I'm trying to find, I'm searching for 94 BCD crankset. I'm searching for micro drive crankset. Some of my favorites, you know, the Suntour XC Pros out there are really good. The, you know, the Ritchie Logics are really good. You know, there's a bunch of like boutique cranks like Kukas and Race Face and like, you know, Top Lines, Grafton, things like that, that are out there that are also have a lot of 94 BCD options. Again, make sure you check for cracks before you ride these things because, you know, these are old parts. You know, they're not always going to be in the best of shape. So, you know, those are the cranks that I like. Now, the key factor here is that those cranks were meant to be used generally on 73 millimeter wide bottom bracket shells to get the right chain line for 135 spacing in the rear, which is standard mountain bike spacing, you know, mountain bikes post like 1995. So, you know, you've got to, if you want to adapt this for a 68 millimeter bottom bracket shell for your road bike and or gravel bike, you kind of got to do something funky with the bottom bracket because that 107 or 103, you know, GIS spindle on there is not going to get your cranks in far enough to get the right chain line or an acceptable Q factor. Q factor is the quack factor. That's how far apart your feet are. You want those, in my opinion, your Q factor should always be taken into consideration, and it isn't anymore in modern bikes, outboard bottom bracket bearings. outboard bearing, outboard bearing bottom brackets, your feet are way the fuck out there. So you're dragging more, you know, you're more susceptible to pedal strike when you're going around corners. Your hips have to be wider. It just doesn't feel natural to me. You're riding a hog. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's one of the great things about, you know, square taper spindle crankset systems is that you could suck a man further than you would with an outboard system. So you're going to want to get an Italian ISO bottom bracket here, okay, spindle-wise. It's because you'll still got to fit in your 68-millimeter English bottom bracket shell, most likely.
Put spacers?
Yeah. Well, no, we're not talking spacers here. Okay, we're not putting this on a 70. So you're getting an ISO. Generally, Campagnola made the best bottom brackets ever. And I look for a Chorus or a Campy or a Chorus or a Record bottom bracket, 68-millimeter shell, and a 102 spindle, ISO. I'm using those JIS cranksets on the ISO spindle, another Sheldon Brown trick, and that gives me another few millimeters to suck those cranks in as far as possible.
If that's comfy for your body. If your hips
It's going to give you a better chain line. It's going to give you better, because you want that chain line to match up with the big your climbing gear in the rear, because that's when you're really mashing. So the further in you can get those cranks, the better chain line you're going to have for when you really need to have a better chain line.
That's a good point, but your point, Jory, is?
You can get the $18 Shimano BB UN 300 or whatever, 300. Size to your shell, or maybe run a little spacer. But it's also just some people's body and their hips do not like a tight Q factor and need that extra distance there between, just for ergonomics, fit, comfort.
Maybe they came up on super wide stance mountain bikes and it feels real weird for them.
It might just be a nature thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wider hip. Very narrow person here, so
yeah.
I like to keep it tight. That's also, I just read a Charlie Cunningham thing. That's what he was all about too. So
also a narrow person.
Yeah, which is also a narrow person.
Also a foot binder, like you.
Mm-hmm. Also a what?
A foot binder.
A foot binder.
Yeah, binding your feet.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're at an hour 40 minutes now.
This is the good stuff.
This is all the good stuff. You better hope that you're still here with us right now.
I mean, Sally did say that she jumped to the pervert section. So this is for you, Salad. All right. I hope you jump to the pervert section again because we did do a lot of tour talk in the beginning.
Yeah.
This is for you, Salad. So, wrapping all of this fan mail up, there's been a lot of questions about music to turn it a completely different direction. We talked about Jory's band, Stone Fruit. Mm-hmm. Check them out. What are you super into right now?
I'm into
music wise. What are you listening to when you're riding your bike?
Oh, when I'm riding my bike.
Are you listening to music actually?
Yeah. Just yesterday I was listening to music whilst riding my bike.
Yeah.
I think I was listening to Mount Mountain. Which is kind of like some real, kind of like shoegaze, more like, I guess, like stoner shoegaze, like their Australian band would recommend.
Thanks.
Probably like Stone Fruit. You should check out Stone Fruit. Indie Dream Gaze.
Yeah, Indie Dream Gaze for Stone Fruit, Jory's band.
Yeah, check that one out.
Yeah. But then there was also my hip hop moment.
Yeah, that's right. Talk about that. What was that all about?
I think you could talk better about it than I can. Because I don't even know. It's Chad Hugo from Nerds. Nights.
Big news here. Yeah. Big news.
Chad Hugo from Nerds.
From NERD.
Nights.
Okay.
NERD.
NERD, famously tied with Pharrell, who's the designer of Louis Vuitton right now, and made the song "Happy." Clap along, if you.
So I got a few messages on Friday morning that I got a shout out
from New York City rapper, Lee Kelly 47, who did that song. That shit is a girl blunt. I only smoke girl blunts. You know, that song? Very, very cool.
I loved the video. Once we put it on, I was like,
the
dang.
The video was really good.
I thought the song was really good, too. It's not. I'm not like a hip-hop guy by any means.
Because the track is Jump Up When Ya.
Okay.
Jump Up When Ya.
An exclamation point instead of the I.
Tierra Whack.
And Lake Kelly 47.
And Lake Kelly 47. The line is, then I hit the road like I'm Ronnie Romance.
Yeah, that's right. It's the mic drop line.
Yeah, it's the final line. It was so, pretty amazing.
Thank you. That was really cool.
That was really cool.
Yeah, so maybe these tens of millions are coming.
Yeah, right. It was really wild seeing you in Rap Genius. That was a really cool moment in my life because I learned English kind of on Rap Genius. So that's wild.
So, yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, because of that, I've just been listening to Girl Blunt on repeat.
So
Tierra Whack is also cool, Philly rapper.
So you just never know where bikes are going to take you.
I just don't understand the connection. She must have like Googled like who's a cyclist and saw you. I don't know why she would shout you out like that.
Well, I mean, come on.
Yeah,
you give me some credit.
Okay.
I got street smarts.
It's true.
she really landed on him too. It was
I could be persuaded to be a city boy for a few hours.
You can.
Yeah. the lyrics here are risk and reward. I'ma always take a chance. Betting on myself is the way I enhance.
Correct.
When I touch the room, get him at first glance. Then I hit the road like I'm Ronnie Romance.
Drop it, Jory.
So, really good. I think we should end today with that.
Yeah.
Folks, check out the song in the video. I think I put it out in our last...
link in description.
Yeah, link in description. Yeah, we'll put the link in the description. I also sent it out in the last newsletter because we currently have CR1 road bikes for pre-order. So that's it, folks. This is a long one. I hope you've enjoyed hanging out with us here.
Jory, thank you for hanging out with
us. Of course.
This was so
nice. And it stopped raining.
Right?
We could definitely go outside now. It was really, really fun hanging here, guys.
Been a very sweet visit.
Yeah. We miss you in our lives.
Very held. Cared for.
Well, folks, I hope you find someone out there to care for you or you're caring for someone else because that's what this is all about, isn't it? So, you know, perhaps I take back what I said about Tade and Del Toro, but the more I think about it, nope, I have not.
He's digging it in.
But, you know.
And on the eve of your birthday, you can do as you wish.
That's right.
Lion Prince.
That's right. That's right. Make sure you like and subscribe. That's what I want for my birthday present, everyone. All right. Let's hit the stop button. And everybody, we love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.